Okay, let's do a podcast. Can we do claps? I want to be done because I'm really hungry and I have to watch three episodes of Andor tonight. So
For your other
for your other
podcast, there's
I
homework.
do. There is
Love
homework,
that.
yeah.
See, I'm a responsible person, ate my noodles before recording.
Okay, well I had to be at work and then I had to write this episode.
Oh yeah, true. Thanks for writing the episode.
It's a short one today, but that's because I don't want to dive into New York right now. And
True.
that is
We can
next.
expand on episode 17, our original trolley bus coverage. It's been a fat flippin' minute.
It's been a hot sec, and I just feel like because I was on second today and feeling like sort of sad about the fact that there was no wires, and so I thought we'd talk about
I don't know if
this.
they started second when we did episode 17.
They had not. So we're going to briefly discuss charging in motion, or in motion charging, as people like to call it now for some reason. Okay. Welcome to the internet, live from your favorite apartment building in insert downtown. This is the Red Line Podcast. I'm your host, quote, Counting Peaches, unquote, Dunstan, and these are my co-hosts.
Kyle, quote, bleep, close quote, Holland, and
Alex, quote, I was 1 minute late today, close quote,
Oh,
Fyodor. Today we're
oh,
talking about
buff.
today we're talking about the future of electric bus technology, charging in motion. Just why is CIM so powerful, and what does prospects look like going forward? All this after the news.
Can I get a noise?
Do 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 do. Sorry, I was just
Wink.
looking at a picture of Gavin Newsom.
Why? This is like your what you like. Why are I don't want to know. Okay.
No, you don't.
Newsome chaser.
Link has been expanded again with another 3.4 miles of line 2 opening just a few days ago. The line's four new stations will complete the portion of the line on the east side of Lake Washington, and the line over the bridge into the city is expected to open later this year. The four new stations serve the growing suburb of Redmond and will have every 10-minute service between 5:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. until the bridge to Seattle opens.
And this is like the long-term terminus of the two line, right?
I believe so, yes. This is like the two line trademark East End.
I was on a bit of a Sound Transit 3 reading binge after I got wind of this news item.
Okay, and tell. Do tell more.
Sound Transit 3, lots of trains, all of the planning and project management problems that Sound Transit 1 and Sound Transit 2 had combined.
God bless the United States of America.
Or sorry, Sound Move, not Sound Transit 1, whatever they
But they
call it.
didn't presumably have like four different monorail proposals and a metro before this.
No. This is a pretty
Very
straightforward ex
sad.
expansion on the existing system with some cuts and a pretty big freeway HOV lane BRT.
Boo. Why?
And the usual questionable link alignments that they're trying to just squeeze park and ride ridership out of because they suck enough that they're not going to get very much pedestrian ridership.
I love American urban planning. Funnily enough, Seattle, since this has come up, monorail city, right? Came closer to having an actual monorail system than any other American city.
And it's probably the only American city that would have actually pulled that off.
Oh, I think they could have, but they didn't. But no, I was considering making this episode the transit in the Simpsons episode. Which, is
That
famous
would be a
for
good
having an
episode.
episode called Marge and the Monorail, or Marge versus the Monorail. Maybe I'll make you guys watch that and we'll do an episode about
I
it.
did not know that.
Yeah, we
Oh,
should.
so we get homework just because your other homework, your
Oh,
other
this is
podcast has
this look, this
homework.
would be a much easier homework than my other podcast because a Simpsons episode is about 20 minutes long
Okay.
and Andor episodes are about an hour long. So I have an hour worth of episodes to watch this evening.
Yippee.
Okay, thank you, thank you.
I mean, it will be good because it's Andor, but like still.
Well, when you say 10-minute service, like, until the bridge to Seattle opens, is it going to go down to like 5 or 2.5?
I think it'll be like 7.5 or something when the bridge to Seattle opens. And I'm not sure on that, so don't quote me on that. But I meant that it will be operating from 5:30 to 9:30 until the bridge opens.
Okay.
After it opens, I think it will have later service.
Is this the infamous floating bridge as well that they had so much issue with?
This is the infamous floating bridge that they had to replace all the piers in because of an incompetent contractor. Yes, it is.
Woo.
Fun.
Again, I love American transit planning.
Yeah. Here's the whole Sound Transit 3 map. They've got some really, really nice light rail extensions. All the way from Everett to Tacoma, plus...
Yes. Let's have the universe's... goddamn. We're going to have someday in this country... we will have a north-south light rail line extending the entire length of I-5.
Based? Okay. Count me in.
Okay. Send the picture. Send the picture. I want to see
it. I see no problem.
I see many problems, but send the picture.
Of an I-5?
Yeah, no, I thought you said you were going to send us
sent out the wrong... I sent this in, like, some random other chat that is completely unrelated to the podcast, which is slightly awkward. Here we go. I sent the picture.
Yes, Seattle, home of the slut.
Ah, yes. Okay, so light rail Tacoma to Everett, which I think is just the whole service area of everybody who pays into the system. Bunch of cool stuff on the west side of Seattle, which did not previously exist. An entire second tunnel through downtown Seattle, obviously the bridge, and then they just finished downtown Redmond, and then there's another branch out that way.
Wow. Is to Issaquah? I don't know.
Yeah. Do I understand the service pattern they're going to run on this? No.
It's so weird seeing this map without water. I don't know why they did it this way.
Yeah, I hate this map. I hate the color coding. I hate the diachromaticity. It's a terrible map.
Look up Seattle Subways map instead. I think it's better.
Oh, I was also just looking at the individual project maps on like the small font full-length proposals.
I love to be in Bellevue, Washington. I will say that Bellevue, Washington may be like the best light rail expansion in American history because unlike most places we expand light rail to, there is stuff there, capital T, capital S. Like they have a station on this new online too that is like squat in the middle of the Microsoft campus.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It's got like a whole bridge because the Microsoft campus straddles the freeway.
Has a freeway in it. Yeah, and there's just like probably 10 trillion jobs here.
Real.
I think that's quite good.
I really like the picture in this Urbanist article you sent of the Sound Transit CEO, and it just looks like he's going to kill himself. Jump on the tracks.
It's like, it is so over.
I've had to deal with so much drama from all the municipalities and board members.
Yeah, here, let me send it on over because it's very, very funny looking.
I will also note that this is a picture from downtown Bellevue, Washington. This is a suburb, folks.
Oh, wow.
This is like the Brooklyn of Seattle, I think.
Yeah, it's... Seattle has more than one. This is the Oakland of Seattle is what this is.
Okay, fucking West Coaster.
We're on the West Coast. We're on the West. Seattle's on the West Coast, and therefore it is Oakland and not Brooklyn or Jersey City. Okay, this has been the news.
Dude, but I was going to complain about the BRT.
Okay, fine. Complain about the BRT.
Giant BRT. In the median of Interstate 405, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you go on the map, that's kind of like the opposite side of the bay from Tacoma up, swinging all the way vaguely near Bellevue, all the way up to Linwood. Why does my map not have interstates on it? Oh, if you turn on transit, it turns off the interstates. Love that. Anyways, based. So BRT, to kind of cover the other side of the, not bay, sound. Sorry, Seattleites.
That's not the sound, Kyle. That's Lake Washington.
Oh, okay. Where's the sound?
The sound is on the west side of Seattle. It's the big bit.
Boat terminology is incomprehensible.
Anyway, continue.
Okay, so they are putting a BRT. I'll send the picture of where all the stops are. There are not very many of them. The cool thing is that all, if not almost all of these stops are on freeway ramps. So unlike a UTA express bus, it doesn't have to like make like five incomprehensible turns after it gets off the freeway. The downside is the system is supposed to use the HUV toll lanes along the entire length of I-405, except it doesn't because the bus needs to constantly weave in and out of the HUV toll lanes to get all the way to the exit ramp and then leave the freeway, go to the stop, go back on the freeway, and then go all the way to the HUV toll lanes and then back and so forth and so on and so forth.
Why didn't you just get like put a median stop?
You know, I think that would be very cool. They don't seem to have done any of these. They've picked like a couple of like super high investment stops, which I don't have a picture of. But one of them, they're like digging up an entire clover leaf, like kaboom, whole thing is gone. Ugh. And replacing it with this like triple stack interchange where the middle layer is an interchange for buses only between the east-west street and the HUV toll lanes of the north-south freeway.
Oh.
Which I guess is cool, but is also, like, comically expensive. So my complaint about this BRT project is not that it will be bad. It will probably be just fine. It's that they're spending an absolutely incomprehensible amount of money, like over $800 million, on stops that aren't even that good.
Oh, American and transit pudding, my beloved.
No linear infrastructure at all. This is just on stops and like 34 buses.
Yay.
Gotta love it.
But hey, good for them. Seems like a useful transit connection.
Okay, this has been the news for real.
Do 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 do.
Sorry, I did the Kosnik noise, but it didn't seem to pick it up.
Oh, okay.
Okay, who's reading today? Because it's not me.
I vote Alex.
Okay.
Alex, like sigh, must I?
Sigh. Okay, so what is in motion oh my charging? God.
The eternal question returns. Ha ha ha.
You know, when we originally covered this in episode Kyle. 17, I wonder if we introduced this the same. Let me listen real quick.
I don't think that we did. I think we probably didn't.
No, probably not.
We must ask
the eternal question. What is trolley bus?
Did we actually?
Yes.
Oh, wicked.
You're going to have to clip that in.
That was 2.5 years ago.
Well, let it never be said we don't have a brand.
Anyway, to answer.
Well, that's happened in 2.5 years. So let's answer the question again.
In-motion charging is a fairly simple concept, which originally I'm bad at reading on the fly.
Maybe we should give you a couple minutes to skim first.
Yeah, maybe. Is that couple minutes going to kill you, Sophie?
No. I'm just being a bitch.
Sophie's over there having hernia.
Okay, what the hell is that? I'm looking at Seattle transit stations now.
Yeah, which one?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, so before we answer the question of what in-motion charging is, we need to go back to trolleybus times.
Wow, because in-motion charging is a direct derivative of trolleybuses?
Surprisingly.
Oh, well, that means we can't have it.
scary.
Yeah, well, the scary trolleybus... exactly what they sound like, trolleys with rubber tires. They run exclusively off of power from overhead wires and turn it off when there's no power. Woo,
which
safety.
Is very funny, because if the trolley bus dewires unintentionally, you have to get
it
out
stops.
And put the thing yeah. back on the wire, because it just comes to a dead stop.
Yeah, so I wonder if we're going to address that a bit later on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have we foreshadowed enough yet?
I don't think so. So the trolley bus was first invented in 1882, but didn't become widespread until the 1910s and 1920s. This limits their flexibility and means that a lot more physical infrastructure is needed for any given bus route. Probably part of why diesel buses are more common than trolley buses, even though the life cycle costs of a trackless trolley system are sometimes lower than those of a diesel bus system, the initial investment is much higher.
Well, and you would think that this would make Americans love trolley buses, because we love to build something with a high initial investment and like
then
not use any operating funds on it. But
yeah, that's true.
For some reason that has not happened with this, presumably because NIMBYs hate overhead wires for no reason.
They're more visible probably. Than cars, that's for sure.
Oh my god.
Definitely.
I don't think that that's true. I think that's fake news.
Picture really? Of average San wire? Francisco street, which is lined on both sides with parked cars, and also has two like super thin wires suspended above it.
Yeah, but the cables block the sky that I always look up at every single minute of my life.
How have you not been hit by a car?
Oh, true, because Alex in this situation is canonically a NIMBY driver. And if I get so much as 0.1% less light because it got blocked by a wire, then...
Then you die. It will immediately. Be and painfully.
Ruined. Yep. And I take all my like scenic family photos in like carefully staged locations across San Francisco, such that a wire's in the way. And I couldn't possibly just go to one of the majority of places where there's not a wire.
And then I go back to the ugliest single family house in the world, 2 inches from a light rail line that serves 40 billion people per day. Okay, well, let's continue.
Yeah, these limitations bring us to charging in motion. As you've probably noticed, electric buses are kind of in vogue right now.
Yeah, under the guise of environmentalism.
Not under the guise of environmentalism. I think it's legitimately an environmentalist-like thing that people are trying to do, but...
I do think it is legitimately an environmental thing, but all of the federal... push for electric vehicles, whether that be in the new post office fleet or in the $7,500 subsidy for buying new cars, which is a thing that we definitely need, or in federal purchasing funds for electric buses, I think is less about like fundamental environmentalism and more about like environmentalism virtue signaling.
Ah, interesting.
Sounds about
right. Because while these things are, I think, have been shown to be better for the environment in life cycle cost and are certainly better for local air pollution, which matters a lot in busy city centers, London, even though that's been shown, when we're installing electric buses, electric vehicles, whatever, the argument isn't, okay, this will make the environment this statistic better, this will make the air this statistic better, this will save us this amount of child labor and...
The argument
whatever country
is that
we
it's
get cobalt
good
from.
For the environment trademark.
It's good for environment vibes and environment green paint. Carbon footprint.
Woo!
Woo!
Well,
I love my carbon footprint.
I'm so proud of my carbon footprint.
Yeah, of how low mine is. L, losers, your carbon footprint is higher than mine. Ha ha.
Meanwhile, BP oil.
That's not true. I fly way too much.
Well, anyway, under the same guise of, I don't know if you call it virtue signaling, would you?
Sure, call it virtue signaling.
Okay. Transit agencies really love showing off new electric buses, and they have lots of press conferences about them.
I remember when Boise got its first electric bus, they had like a giant press conference about it. And I was like,
oh my goodness.
You know, this is a good thing. I'm not sure this is like a press conference good thing. Especially since you guys carry like two people per day.
Like, if just getting like a new like modern CNG bus as part of like a regular fleet renewal program is like 5 good points, maybe getting a battery electric bus instead is like 10 good points. That's really in the same league.
I would agree with that.
Je suis d'accord.
Like, it's only like a game-changing difference when you take like the entire fleet of downtown London double-decker buses and you make them battery electric, and suddenly you can breathe in like 1 square mile where all the buses converge. That's game-changing. Other than that, it's a little bit good.
Yeah. Well, besides the positive optics, there's a whole host of problems with electric buses. Mainly, to begin, they're heavy, like really heavy, because of all of the batteries.
And the more range you want, the more heavier the bus.
Yeah. They do burst into flames surprisingly often because of said batteries.
Yeah.
They sometimes shake themselves apart because the batteries are so heavy.
What is this, the U of U battery electric bus?
They never ran those. And I think
yeah, because it kept getting sidelined due to mechanical problems.
Because they kept getting shaken apart.
Yeah, you could feel it. Yeah. They shake themselves apart. They don't really work so well in cold temperatures, like winters in Utah, I suppose.
Or anywhere.
Or anywhere outside of Nevada.
Can't wait for my bus route number 10 in Anchorage, Alaska, to need 10 buses per run just to get down the street.
Due to range deflation, due to temperatures. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is the problem consumer EVs try to solve with battery heaters, but it only goes so far.
Yeah. Well,
and there are still fundamental efficiency and range losses.
Battery heaters in the winter, but also battery air conditioning in the summer. also just using the batteries for air conditioning in the summer.
True.
You also need more of them than traditional buses because they have less time in service than a normal bus because you have to charge them.
This is kind of like the biggest thing. Like,
yeah, well, more we'll get to why later.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if this is a solution to this issue.
I wonder. But like more weight you can write off as another department, that being the city streets department's problem and budget. Bursting into flames you can write off as the fire department's problem and budget. Shaking them apart you can just yell at the manufacturer about and hope they make better buses. Cold temperatures, you can buy these
global
in places
warming.
That don't get that cold. Or global warming, sure. But most of the other problems can be pawned off. The fleet size cannot.
Yeah, only so far, though, because if your bus does burst into flames, you are down a bus.
This is true. Most bus fleets have a pretty decent percentage of extras.
But to go along with the issue of like battery time and needing to charge them, trying to charge hundreds of buses in one location is an electrical engineer's nightmare.
Now, if you thought a Tesla supercharger pulled a lot of kilowatts.
Oh my gosh. Now, putting that many trolley buses in one area definitely would increase the fire risk.
Well, and these batteries are at their most vulnerable when they're charging. That's just how the battery chemistry works.
You're going to cause a whole-ass explosion. Like,
like the kind of theoretical worst case is one bus blows, just has a routine thermal overrun while it's charging, catches into a giant fire, and then starts destroying the rest of your fleet. And then the fire takes, like, 6 months to put out.
Yeah, because it's, like, worse than the worst mine fire that has ever happened.
This is going to happen one of these years.
Yeah, and it'll be fun. It'll be a good time.
It'll light up the sky. It'll fill the air with...
with joy something. And love.
Joy and love. Uh-huh. So, with all these problems, there's some solutions, mostly to the charging. That is on-route charging, but this is slow, and it slows things down. And transit is slow enough already, so not the best.
And it can either
solution.
Slow down the actual route if you for some reason needed to charge in the middle of the route due to battery size, or it can just make your equipment problem worse, because if you're charging at the end of the line, you're going to need additional buses just sitting and charging at the end of the line, and you can kind of like hot swap them out and rotate the operator through the buses, as opposed to a bus that actually has enough range for the day, which will just sit for like 5 minutes and then turn around.
Yeah, there's that. And there's also underground charging asphalt stuff.
Oh, yeah. The thing that they're doing at USU, as you mentioned, Alex, they're bizarre.
Oh, my God. Are they actually building this at USU?
There's a test track already. It's like maybe a quarter of a mile loop.
The technology? Is it just like an open conduit, like tram style?
No, I think it's loops of wires underneath the pavement.
Oh my God, we're induction charging full-size buses?
I think so.
Well,
yeah,
you know what would be better than just direct contact is to do like a huge induction thing under every road. That would be much cheaper.
Which is definitely not really expensive and really inefficient.
That would be much cheaper. So much cheaper
than putting up the goddamn wires.
So much cheaper.
An American will do anything except put up the goddamn wires.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah, so here's the fast facts about USU's groundbreaking facility, which is stationary inductive power transfer.
Wow.
Capacity for 750 kilowatts of power with AC to track and DC to track provisions. Modular charging pads embedded under the track wirelessly power in motion electric vehicles.
Oh, God. Why are we like this?
I'll add the link in. Cause
can we be can America, this is my plea to you, America, can we be normal for like 1 minute? Please, God.
I have a feeling.
The damn wires.
This could decrease male fertility.
Yeah, this will decrease male fertility. This will allow immigrants into our country.
Well, maybe if it decreases male fertility, we'll stop selling so many goddamn pickup trucks and overweight electric cars.
It balances out.
Never mind, this is good, actually.
No, but the whole benefit of, like, road technology, like, this is the point of the original bustitution, is that it is cheaper to build and can be made, in many circumstances, cheaper to operate than any sort of, like, railed or wired fixed guideway. If you have more than just asphalt, that is no longer true, and you might as well just build a train.
Based? I'll just mention, I think the people working on this breakthrough are also doing the battery trains.
Oh, they must be.
So,
because these are the
really...
same level of good.
What's next? Instead of a third rail or a catenary, we're going to have induction loops on the track?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So. Or we'll electrify one track and then we'll electrify
couple
the rails
it to the ground
again.
Capacitively.
Yeah. But anyway. So there's the two kind of bad options, and then there's the woke-based option, which is in-motion charging.
Which is the focus of this episode.
Yes. We finally got to it. Which combines the flexibility of an electric bus with the benefits of a trolley bus network, and also allows buses to have smaller batteries than regular electric buses, allowing them to operate off-wire for a good distance. But can encounter enough wired sections to pretty much keep them going without needing
through the
to
magic
to
of
charge.
Putting up the damn wire, or at least some of the damn wire.
Wow.
Yeah. 60% of the... Wait, you only need... Oh, I was going to guess 60%, but you only need 35 to 50% of a route wired up to use them.
Yeah, according to a study...
Which I assume is just a math problem of like how much power flows from the wires to the bus versus how much power does the bus use.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like a min-max problem for battery size.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Well, and the charging rate of the battery as well.
Yeah. But basically, this gives them a practically unlimited daily range, and they can go as far as they want without needing to stop to charge or refuel, as long as they can reach enough wire. And
so this is kind of everything you would get out of like a conventional 100% wired trolley bus. There's no fuel, there's no charging stops, there's no extra
but
fleet.
With less wire.
But with less wire at the expense of a little bit of battery, which is definitely worth it from a cost perspective and almost certainly worth it from an infrastructure maintenance perspective.
Yeah, well, less battery weight for the road, but also less wire for the NIMBY, less battery for the fire.
Me and... when I feed the wire to the NIMBY.
The NIMBY hates wire. They will throw a fit.
The NIMBY does hate wire.
The NIMBY, when they encounter 750 volts DC instead of God-given American 288 volt AC.
Well, you can take advantage of major bus corridors with this as well and use them as in-motion charging hubs, like 200 South. You need less buses as well, which is good for cost, but also just, I don't know, good for storage of buses and the space that takes up.
It's well, and I think that's kind of like the biggest thing, because when you, now that you're purchasing like a substantial percentage fewer buses, you have all that extra budget that you are going to spend on buying the rest of your bus fleet to spend on electrical infrastructure. And then you can just keep the surplus.
It's kind of the perfect balance if you do it right. But more importantly, I guess for this episode, it's better for the environment. We tend in transit spaces at least to think of environmental protection only in terms of climate change. But there's a lot of different aspects we have to consider and a lot more localized impacts.
Yeah, I love talking constantly about the arsenic lake dust and the water supply and whatever in literally my backyard, but we don't talk very often about
heavy metal mining in other countries that doesn't need to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And smaller buses that have less batteries are going to use a lot less of these rare earth minerals. And yeah, as you said, very bad for the environment mining these minerals, and lots of ethical issues as well.
Yeah, like slavery.
I could have just said slavery.
That's how you get minerals for cheap, is actual literal slave labor. What's next? Are we going to start, well, like UTA already buys like green grid power for like a slight surcharge. Are they going to start buying like ethical lithium at like fair, three times the price or whatever?
I love my fair trade lithium.
USDA pretty, organic.
That's pretty good.
But you do make a good point. If our buses are suddenly using several times less of these heavy metals, then it's much easier for the state to stomach, or the feds realistically to stomach paying more for not doing slave labor.
Yeah,
which I bet would look good at a re-election.
Yeah,
well,
I don't
unless
think
you're
stopped
a Republican,
people.
Then they actually that helps you to use slave labor.
True. Right, like this is the platonic ideal of American capitalism, designed by Apple in California, made in China.
Yeah.
I forget.
Yeah. But, well, anyway, yeah, slavery, bad. That's our
take. Controversial take on the Red Line podcast today.
And other than less slavery, which is always going to be a good thing, the materials are also a bit cheaper, so I don't know, does that mean more slavery? Anyway, let's not get too much into that.
That, but that the cost does of mean battery... more slavery. No. It does. So the materials. Yeah.
So more slavery.
Yeah.
So maybe overall with
slavery,
keeping the same number of same amount of slavery by using less, but through the beauty of capitalism, we are also making more slavery to bring down the cost.
Yeah, because that's a much better solution. Instead of reducing it's a market-based solution. I guess I'm not sure if this is a solution at all, but
well, just anyway, let's move on. It's less intensive and expensive charging infrastructure than just regular full-blown battery buses.
And that's kind of a cool thing, because you could imagine, you know, you buy all these electric buses, you buy all these electric bus chargers, and then you also buy an overhead wire and substation system. No, you can cut out most of the other charging infrastructure and just rely on that overhead wire, and your buses can come back to the yard charged.
Based. It's also, I didn't think about this before, it's good for detours, because you can't really detour a trolley bus too easily.
Yeah, and that's one of the selling points to the everyday transit user of buses. Obviously, the selling point to transit management is that they cost less because they're worse, but the selling point to the everyday transit user is that when incomprehensible amounts of construction are happening, the bus can go around it, and, you know, maybe it'll be a bit slower, maybe it'll miss some stops, but at least you won't have to, like, get off the train, get on the bus, get off the bus, get back on the train, and then finally get to your destination 30 minutes late. So being able to do this is great.
Oh.
And this also brings to mind, Sophie, I think we mentioned on a previous long time ago news segment, Boston tearing out the last of their
trolley wires. Yeah, they tore out the last of their goddamn trolley wires like a bunch of idiots.
Because they were doing, you know, a long-term construction project that would have required the buses to, you know, route around the under-construction area. And they had regular trolley buses. And they're like, oh shit, we can't run these buses. Let's just give up on the concept of trolleys entirely because we're scared of capital costs and wires. Now, if they had trolley buses at the time, there would probably be a lot more momentum to maybe do some phased construction and have the buses skip off the wire for a bit and then skip back on.
But why would we do that? Yeah. When we could simply replace them with diesels forever, basically, with the promise that someday we'll use electric buses, battery electric buses, that is, instead.
The most permanent fix is a temporary one, and Bostonians are allowed to hate themselves. It is their constitutional right.
Well, it's not allowed to. I think they're required to.
Well, I'm not going to encourage it.
I encourage Bostonians to hate themselves. We all know you're worse than New York.
We've saved the best factor for last. And it's just that they're dope as hell.
That's true. They are dope. They're sick. They're cool.
If you are the NIMBY that we were mentioning earlier, and you go on like your big Euro trip or whatever, and you pretend you're in a theme park and you fail to process how all of these technologies could exist at home, and you see all these trolley buses and trams and stuff. Imagine having this at home. We could be cool.
Being cool is out of date now, but
being cool is overrated.
Well, being cool involves looking at a wire.
And that is not cool.
I don't know. I think wires are cool.
No, I wish the wire was never invented. I hate electricity.
I too hate electricity. Electricity is You're the third the party devil. In the
Edison Tesla feud.
Yeah, electricity has the devil in it.
Because it can kill you.
That's
unlike
true.
Fire.
That's true.
Fire is notoriously good.
Safe so. And not
And
dangerous.
Gas cars never catch fire with people inside of them?
No.
You know what does have the devil in it? AI. Don't use it, kids. True. It will steal your soul and kill you.
Hmm. The devil I was going to say the devil can also be found in the details sometimes.
Yeah, the devil is also in the details quite frequently.
And behold, this is the canon of the Redline podcast. Bible dropping soon.
Yeah, that was ex cathedra, by the way. That's a Pope reference. Also, can we talk briefly? Chicago Pope.
Deep dish Pope. Socks fan Pope.
Yeah, well, that's how you know he's Christian. You know, hoping for the impossible.
Here to unite Catholics across the world.
Chicago, man, of all places. Anyway.
Apparently he lives in like Peru or something, but he's originally from Chicago, and I'm going to flex that whenever I can.
Yeah, America, number one. USA, number one in the world. Et cetera.
Well, anyway, back on topic, away from Chicago Pope. We mentioned that batteries are getting cheaper, but even with increased capital costs, the life cycle of a CIM trolley bus may be cheaper than battery electric buses.
Probably.
This is one of those things a lot of cities are not, in fact, implementing, so we just have to do the white paper math for.
Yeah, I recommend the article linked here. It's very good. It explains how CIM trolley buses may be cheaper and are definitely at least equivalent in cost to BEVs over a life cycle period. So, okay. Something.
Oh, that's nice. Like, they've got the fleet size, wire cost, yeah, electrical equipment cost, everything. That's nice.
It's a good article.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, we will link that for the viewers.
Anyway, who's implementing it? Pretty much everywhere that has trolley buses.
And that isn't scared of putting up the damn wire, bunch of wusses in other cities.
Haters, losers.
Your city could be next if you have trolley buses. So,
well, no, your city could be next. You could start a new build trolley bus system. It has been done before.
UTA, on South please. Temple, we've got retro trolley poles as the light posts, but we're too scared to put up the damn wires on the trolley poles.
No, you know where we need to put up the damn wires?
200
Second
South. UTAs, let's run for 2/3 of the buses in the system.
What the heck is 200 South?
Outsider. Brigham Cityite.
That's what you are.
UTA deciding to route like 2/3 of the buses through the downtown area for like a mile and a half on the same street. The city spending a bunch of money to put curbside bus lanes on it and nice stops with apparently even real-time arrival screens and everything. And everybody involved still being too much of a wuss to put up the damn wires.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, although to be fair to 200 South, like the Route 2, which just goes up 200 South, the university and back, that would be a trivial charging in motion route with just 200 South. I think a lot of the other routes are so damn long, they would need some additional cable sections, which is scary, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we should center one of them exactly on 9th and 9th, just for the cool factor.
Should I do the conclusion?
Yeah, why not? Let's switch it up a little bit today, just for kicks and giggles.
Does that mean I should do front runner?
Sure, why not? I'll do what tier does Alex normally do? Is it blue line?
Red
Kyle,
line.
Kyle, can you pull up red line tier for me?
Yeah.
Okay, let me pull mine up as well. Let's see. Please remember to like, comment, and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube, and to follow and leave us a rating on iTunes and Spotify. If you like what we do here, you can become a member on Patreon. Patrons receive early access to all of our regular content, as well as exclusive content and occasional merch drops. Speaking of patrons, at Charging in Motion tier, or Frontrunner tier, $10 a month, we have Zach Adams, Aaron, Curtis Herring, Devin Zander, Phobos2390, and Tony Stunts.
At Redline tier, $5 a month, we have Christopher Whaley, DJ High Will Watkins, Elijah Kensler, Isaac Madsen, Jesse Mayo, Nebula 3LEM123, Reluctant LA Resident, Robert P. Walsh, and Zephyr Zamoro.
At Battery Bus, end-of-line charging station tier, $3 a month, also happening to be located at the Blue Line Terminus at Salt Lake, quote, Central, unquote, we have Alex Dykelski, Alice MYOB, Ben, Ethan McDonald, Evelyn, G4, Jack McCoskey, Litmus Zest, Martin Hacker Martinez, Matt Gray, McKay Ransom, Oliver, Sam Myers, Sky Lakowski, Toronto Transit Channel, Zach Verstott, and Zach Verstott.
Wow, double mention.
And at Concrete with Induction Loops Under It tier, $1 a month.
Ouch.
We have, actually, that might be a bit too mean. At regular Green Line.
Well, they get free phone charging.
I guess so. I don't know. Still feels too mean. At Green Line tier, $1 a month, we have Benjamin Wood, Joshua S. Horvath, Kapil, Ryan Bailey, and William Rowe. Okay, we got through it. Thank you all.
Yeah. Go ride a bus and go pray that it becomes a charging motion trolley bus.
True.
Before the heat death of the United States.
It could happen. Anything is possible. It's like in Mary Poppins.
True.
Or Narnia.
Or Narnia. Another true story.
yeah.